Intense busyness is a status symbol in our culture. In 21st century America, what we do as a people, as a culture, how we measure our life success level is we look at whether or not we are cramming as many things into our lives as we possibly can. And as we know from looking at the Bible, whatever is out there in the culture that Christians are living in tends to worm its way into our minds, our hearts, our lifestyles. And so if you're like me, you catch yourself in everyday conversations reflecting this, reflecting intense busyness. When somebody asks me how I'm doing, in a very casual way, how are you doing, Nathan? I catch myself saying, oh, I am so busy, you wouldn't believe it. I'm going here, I'm going there, I've got this study, I've got that study, and I'm chugging caffeine, and I'm doing all these things. And it strikes me, when I look at the scriptures, that that does not reflect a godly lifestyle. And that when I speak in that way, I'm not reflecting a life that really I should be living in the Lord. But what I do is I wear my busyness as a badge of honor, almost as if cramming everything I can into my life and being as busy as I can, living on the edge of burnout, that somehow makes me a worthwhile human being. That if I'm not doing that, as everybody else in our culture seems to be doing when you talk to them, that somehow I'm not living up to my potential as a human being, as a Christian. And yet, when we see people in the Bible doing that, they're told to scale it back. They're instructed, they're given godly wisdom to not do that, to not live that kind of life. And so if you're like me, you have a to-do list as long as your arm or longer. And if you're like me, you're really frustrated at the fact that there are only 24 hours in a day and that we cannot just go without sleep and we have to stop at some parts of our day and rest. And so we have to ask ourselves, how do we work efficiently? How do we work effectively to produce the kinds of righteous deeds that we know we should do without going to this extreme and burning out and fizzling and deciding, well, I'm just going to throw in the towel. It's too hard to do everything. I can't do it. So I'm not even going to try. Obviously, we don't need to go there either. But where should we go? When I look at Exodus chapter 18, I notice one particular record, account in Moses' life that's very interesting to me. And I want to spend time with you in Exodus 18, 13 through 27. We're going to read this together and we're going to look at it carefully and then compare our own lives to it to see if whether we're perhaps acting like Moses and maybe living close to burning out. Moses is a very humble man. He's a very godly man. He's a wonderful person, wonderful character in Bible history. And yet he, despite all those wonderful characteristics, was not aware of the fact that he was living close to the edge, close to burning out. And it took somebody on the outside, his father-in-law, as a matter of fact, to come into the camp and help him figure out what to do about his life situation. And so he abandoned that course and he kept his sanity. And I think all of us want to keep ours too and be the kind of Christians we need to be. So let's read this together. Exodus chapter 18, beginning with verse 13. The next day, we'll talk about what happens previous day in just a second. But the next day, Moses sat to judge the people. And the people stood around Moses from morning till evening. When Moses' father-in-law saw all that he was doing for the people, he said, "What is this that you are doing for the people? Why do you sit alone and all the people stand around you from morning till evening? And Moses said to his father-in-law, because the people come to me to inquire of God. When they have a dispute, they come to me, and I decide between one person and another, and I make them know the statutes of God and his laws. Moses' father-in-law said to him, what you are doing is not good. You and the people with you will certainly wear yourselves out, for the thing is too heavy for you. You are not able to do it alone. Now obey my voice. I will give you advice, and God be with you. You shall represent the people before God and bring their cases to God, and you shall warn them about the statutes and the laws and make them know the way in which they must walk and what they must do. Moreover, look for able men from all the people, men who fear God, who are trustworthy and hate a bribe, and place such men over the people as chiefs of thousands, of hundreds, of fifties, and of tens. And let them judge the people at all times. Every great matter they shall bring to you, but any small matter they shall decide themselves. So it will be easier for you, and they will bear the burden with you. If you do this, God will direct you, and you will be able to endure, and all this people also will go to their place in peace. So Moses listened to the voice of his father-in-law and did all that he had said. Moses chose able men out of all Israel and made them heads over the people, chiefs of thousands, of hundreds, of fifties, and of tens. And they judged the people at all times. Any hard case they brought to Moses, but any small matter they decided themselves. Then Moses let his father-in-law depart, and he went away to his own country. How did Moses escape burnout? He had a conversation. He had a conversation with his father-in-law, Jethro. And I just want to summarize with you how this conversation goes. What is said between these two men so that we really understand the context, the situation, and the circumstances here. Because it's really important to see this. So Jethro, we notice his name appears in chapter 18, verse 1. Verse 1 of this chapter that we didn't read. Jethro, the priest of Midian, Moses' father-in-law, heard of all that God had done for Moses and for Israel, his people, and the Lord had brought Israel out of Egypt. So Jethro, his father-in-law, is a Midianite. He's not an Israelite. He is from Midian, and he is a priest of Midian. He is a priest of foreign gods, not the God of the Israelites. Now, when he comes, the reason why he's coming to the camp, and by the way, at this point, we're in Exodus 18, we are already at Mount Sinai. The Israelites are encamped at that mountain. Now, God has not spoken to the people yet. The Ten Commandments are not till two chapters later, chapter 20, but they're at the mountain of God at this point in Exodus. And so Jethro, he makes a trip down to where they are for the specific reason of bringing Moses' wife and his kids. And so that would be a pretty important reason. I'm sure Moses was very happy to see them come. We're told in Exodus 4, verse 20, that when Moses went over to Egypt in order to bring the people out of their slavery, in order for the 10 plagues to happen, and everything he did in Egypt, he brought his family to Egypt, but somewhere in the middle of that time and this time, he sent his family away from him. And evidently they went back to Midian or someplace like that. And so now Jethro is bringing his family back to him in the early part of this chapter. And so Jethro has this chance to catch up with Moses. And so verse 13 takes place the next day after Jethro comes. Jethro comes and he hears about everything that happened in Egypt, and I bet that was a spectacular conversation. And Moses says, hey, Dad, you want to hear about what God did? Well, let me tell you everything that what transpired in Egypt. So that, I'm sure that was quite something for him to hear about, because his conclusion in verse 10, what Jethro says in verse 10 after he's heard all of that is, wow, blessed be the Lord who has delivered you. And he's, in verse 11, he says, now I know that the Lord is greater than all gods, because in this affair they dealt arrogantly with the people. So Jethro is very impressed with this God who is leading the Israelites. But the next day, Jethro is not impressed at all with some things that his son-in-law is doing. And so this next day, he just picture this scene. The next day, he exits his tent, Jethro does, in the morning, bright and early, and there's his son-in-law sitting right there, and there is a line of Israelites that looks like a Black Friday sale. And they are all standing around him. They are encompassing him, asking him questions, arguing together. And so Jethro sees this going on all day long. And then at the very end of the day, Moses drags himself out of that situation. So Jethro is worried about his son-in-law and about this situation. So he asks him the question. I like this about Jethro. He doesn't immediately launch into, okay, let me tell you everything that's wrong about this picture. Now, he asks Moses before he launches into that, Moses, you tell me, what are you doing? What? Why are they standing around you? I think Jethro had a pretty good idea of why, but he wants Moses to share this information. And so what Moses says is really interesting to me. We'll talk extensively about this. Moses says, well, it's just my job. That's just what I do. I am the person who teaches God's laws. And so the people come to me when they've got an argument, and I settle the argument. If there's a dispute, I deal with it, and I pronounce judgment. That's who I'm the leader of the people. It's what I do. And we're not really told in this specific instance whether this is the norm for the Israelites. Clearly, this was happening this day. In chapter 17, though, we know that the Israelites had been attacked by the Amalekites as they're coming up down from Egypt. And so we don't know if this is a special situation where the Israelites have taken a lot of booty, a lot of treasures from the Amalekites, and maybe they're arguing about how to divvy it up. We don't know. Maybe this is just the norm for his life situation. And this is just what absolutely happened every day, regardless of spoils of war. But regardless, Moses, from his perspective, he's the only one who can deal with this situation. And he doesn't see anything wrong or amiss at this situation at the moment. And because he is the one, as we read from Numbers chapter 12 in verse 8, he is the one who has this very special intimate contact with God. And keep in mind, again, this is before the law is given. This is before Mount Sinai, where God speaks his laws to the people. So up to this point, God had not publicly made known what he wanted them to do. So Moses is the only filter for that, for God's laws. And so he sees the situation as not necessarily good, but the way that it is. And so Jethro points out something that is fairly obvious to anybody looking at Moses and the people. He says, what's going to happen is not only you, but also the people are going to reach the burnout stage. They can't keep this up, and you can't keep this up. And so this is exhausting for Moses, because he's got to constantly... Can you imagine all day long, you hear about the problems of other people. And they're coming to you and they're saying, well, I want this and he wants that and how do we work this out? All day long, you're having to deal with this and instruct people about God's laws. But this arrangement doesn't give him opportunity to do other things or to rest. And it's also exhausting for the people because, again, there's a lot of people in Israel. I mean, there's hundreds of thousands of Israelites encamped at Mount Sinai, and no doubt there's a whole lot of them that want Moses to resolve their disputes. And so it's exhausting for the people to wait around. It's like when you try to go to Panera Bread for breakfast, and the line is out the door, you're tempted to think, well, I'm just not going to have breakfast this morning because I can't get in. And so maybe some disputes were not resolved or were not going to be resolved for a long time. This is not an efficient use of anyone's energy. And so Jethro says, this has to change. This is not good. And so what he tells Moses to do is not stop judging. You can still teach the people, and that's good, and you need to share God's laws because you are the main prophet in Israel. But what you need to do is you need to recruit other people to help you with this. And so he tells him very strongly, you need to get guys to help you. This creates this win-win situation for Moses and the people so that he's not working into the dust and so that other men in Israel can have a chance to develop their leadership skills so that other men can practice judging and that will help everybody in the situation. But notice there's qualifications. They're not just polling the crowd and just picking out anybody. Jethro says they've got to be men who have good characters. They fear God. And they've got to be men who won't be susceptible to bribes. Because if you can pay off a judge, what good is that judge to you and your situation? And they've got to be people who are trusted. And so Moses, to his great credit, and this again displays his humility, that he would listen to his father-in-law and his Midianite priest father-in-law at that and say, you know what, I do need to change the situation. I do need to recruit other people to help me in this process. It's a great testament to who Moses was that he did that. You know, if some of us were placed in this kind of situation, perhaps we might have said, you know what, father-in-law, you've only been here for a day, and you're kind of new to this situation. You've only seen this working for a very short time. You know, and you're not really one of God's people, and so you need to leave that up to us. And Moses, despite this interesting relationship, he still listens and he still sees the wisdom in this, and he does choose to alter his methods. And so verse 25 of chapter 18 says that Moses chose able men over the people. And we learn in the passage that Herbie read for us in Deuteronomy 1, that actually what Moses did was he didn't go out and he said, you. He told the people, you choose men who you trust to do this. It's very much like Acts 6, where the apostles get the whole congregation together and they say, you choose men who are godly, who you trust to take care of those Grecian widows, the Hellenistic widows who did not have enough food. So this situation could have been ugly, it could have been a nasty confrontation, but it goes extremely well, and everybody is benefited by what Jethro says and what Moses chooses to do because of it. Now, what we need to do is we need to carefully apply this to us. There are so many good lessons for us in how we can avoid a burnout situation mentally, physically, spiritually speaking, and not reach this point. We need to consider this point from the text that what Moses did was he didn't stop working. He didn't just quit. He didn't take a vacation. He just adjusted the way that he worked, the mechanism that he used to work. What Jethro did not say is, son, you know, the Persian Gulf is really nice this time of year. So what you need to do is you need to go there for a month or two. The people will be fine. We're here at Mount Sinai. We're not going anywhere. Just escape for a little bit. Then you can come back and you can work 90 miles an hour again, and that'll sustain you. That trip will sustain you. That's not what he said. There's no vacation for Moses. There's no Disney World. There's no Caribbean retreat. There's no place he can get off to as a vacation to escape from this. That was not the solution. And yet, for us in our lives, sometimes, I know it's true of me, I chase the illusion that if I could just stop working at some point, either a vacation or retirement or whatever, then that will give me peace. Instead of thinking, I need to fix what is broken in my life as the way it is, and that's not working, so I need to tweak that, instead of thinking, well, if I just stopped working, everything would be fine. God did not design us to stop working. As I've made the point before, I'm sure that you've heard this before from me, but in Genesis 2, before sin was even in the picture, God created work for Adam and Eve to do in the Garden of Eden. Work was not the curse. The curse was your work's going to be much harder than it was before. And so we cannot just keep looking for the next break in the workload for us to keep going, because there are not enough breaks in our workload to sustain our lives in any kind of meaningful way. Now, don't get me wrong. Vacations are nice. And in fact, Jenny and I are about to leave tomorrow to go on a vacation. So this is fresh in my mind. But we have to realize that is not what God designed us to do, is to just look for those breaks and say, that's what's going to make me survive life situations. But here's what Jethro did say. He didn't say, take a vacation. He said, change how you work. You need to judge the people. That is a good thing for you to do, but get some other judges on board. Because God needed him in this situation. He needed him to be teaching. And so if we have some sort of good work that we are doing, the solution is not to quit that work. Obviously, you know, if we have children, and it's difficult for us to sometimes raise those children as we should, depending on the day, depending on the week, depending on the month, the solution is not to get rid of the children, obviously. If you have a job that is demanding, that causes you to work long hours, the solution might not be quit the job and find another one. The solution just might be cutting out the hours that I spend vegging when I could be connecting in a meaningful way with my family. I think all of us, no matter how hard we work, no matter what we do in the space of our week, We sometimes, often, find time somewhere to spend in front of the TV, to spend in front of our phones, to spend in front of whatever device, whatever means of entertainment that we choose to have. Now, we need to ask ourselves, how much of that time are we expending in entertainment? And can we use some of those extra hours that we sometimes find to recharge ourselves with our families, with the people around us that we should be teaching and loving? How do we use our limited resources in the most effective way? Well, we adjust and we cut out the things that we don't really have to have. And notice how also we delegate responsibilities to other members of God's team or God's family. For Moses, that meant handing over a lot of the judging to other people. Notice how he didn't stop, but he just became in charge of the hard cases. And there were chiefs over the other Israelites so that he did not have to do all the work and kill himself. He delegated. He said, "You're going to take charge of these responsibilities." I am grateful that this congregation values delegation. And I've seen that for the year that we have been here. And I'm grateful as it personally applies to me. I am grateful that this congregation does not expect me to teach every sermon, every class, write every bulletin. I'm happy to do that kind of teaching. But because there are other men who can preach, and there are other men who can teach, and there are other men who can write bulletin articles, that frees me, allows me to fill up the rest of my week with personal Bible studies that I have with some of you and some people out there. And so what that does is it takes some of the burden off of me, but it also gives us a chance to be encouraged by other people besides me so that I'm not monopolizing the congregation. And that's what you see here. Moses was monopolizing, and that wasn't giving any of the other men a chance to develop themselves and to gain leadership experience in judging and the kinds of things that they did. And so we need to ask ourselves, in our personal lives, are we doing this? Are we delegating responsibilities when we can, where we can? You know, this hits me because I was thinking through how this does apply to my life. And I was thinking about situations back in Arkansas where I was having stressful weekends. And at my house, the yard work is my job, my domain, my responsibility. And so Jenny would notice that I was having a stressful weekend, and she'd say, "Well, I can mow the yard for you. You know, I know how to use a mower," but because I viewed the yard as my job, and if I'm not doing my job, then I am feeling incomplete as a person, I would not allow her to do that. But what I was doing in that situation is I was depriving her of an opportunity to serve me when I needed it a lot. So as husbands, when our wives see us stressed and they offer, "Honey, I know that that's normally something that you do, but I could do that for you if that would make things easier," do we take them up on that offer? Or do we just think, "No, that is my job, I am the man, that is what I do, and nobody else is going to do that except for me, because it's going to be done by me and it's going to be done right." Is that the way we think? Or do we delegate when we need to? So if a spouse or if a fellow Christian sees you in your life and they see that you're drowning in your responsibilities and they say, "Can I take that off your plate?" Do we let them when they notice us in our life? You know, this morning we talked about comfort. From 2 Corinthians 1, we talked about how we should be comforting each other. And part of the way that we do that is we try to take some of the load off of other people and put it onto our own backs. Do we let other Christians help us in that way? Or do we look at them and we say, "Well, I know that you've got your own plate of responsibilities. You've got things that you need to do. It would be a sacrifice for you to help me like that." But if we're waiting to only be helped by other Christians who don't have to sacrifice for us, we're going to be waiting forever. Because helping other people just inherently involves sacrifice. That's what it means, essentially, to help somebody else when you have your own life that you're trying to live. We need to allow other people the opportunity to serve us by delegating to them. And we need to be humble enough to allow somebody else to look at our life, to look at our situation, and say, you know what? You need to fix this. This is not good. It's rather amazing to me that when Jethro has this conversation with Moses, Moses does not say to him, yes, I know this is not good. And we are trying to work on this. We're trying to get other people involved. This is a temporary situation. Yes, Jethro, I'm aware of all the problems that you are seeing in my life right now. Moses doesn't say that. Moses just basically says, this is the way it is. It's my job. As good of a man as he was, he didn't see this. And as good of people as we can be sometimes we don't see in our own lives where we need to change. This is part of the beauty of the church, is because we're all around each other. I mean, not only in this assembly, but in our lives, and because of that, you can see things about me and my life that I'm just not going to see. And you can come and you can say, okay, Nathan, you're doing this, and you need to fix that. You need to tweak this. This is not productive. It's not effective. It's not efficient. And sometimes I might say, oh, yeah, I can see that. And sometimes I might say, wow, I didn't have a clue about that. We need to be humble enough to know that we have to have fresh pairs of eyes, sometimes many pairs of eyes, to help us in our life, to know how to do our lives effectively. You know, you might be thinking, when we're going through this lesson together, well, I know that I need to delegate, but I don't know how to do that. I don't know what to delegate. I have my to-do list, and often the things on my list are things that only I can do. I don't know where to cut out things. I don't know how to delegate them, because I've got to do them. And I understand that. I feel that way too, which is exactly why this third point is so crucial. If we lay out our life to somebody else, chances are they will be able to see things about how we can delegate, how we can tweak, how we can fix things. And the scriptures in other places back this up too. In verse 6 of Proverbs chapter 24, Proverbs 24 verse 6 says this, "For by wise guidance you can wage your war, and in an abundance of counselors there is victory." In Titus chapter 2 verses 3 through 5, it talks about older women and how older women are to teach what is good, and so train the young women to love their husbands and children, to be self-controlled, pure, working at home, kind, submissive to their own husbands, that the word of God may not be reviled. Sometimes younger women have questions, have issues. How do I do this? Got these little munchkins running around, and I'm trying to juggle 50 things at once. How do I do that? Older women are to help them, to train them, to teach them how to live efficiently. And in Hebrews 13, shepherds over a congregation are supposed to be doing this as well. In Hebrews 13, verse 17, shepherds are described as men who keep watch over our souls as those who will give an account. Part of keeping watch over our souls means that when we are stressed, when we are feeling close to burnout, when we don't know how we're going to make it through the next week, the shepherds are there for us. They're not just there to beat the sin out of us. Oh, I see that you have some problems. You got some false teaching in your life. Let me surgically get that out. Part of their job is to make sure we're living in the doctrine of Christ, but part of their job is to help comfort us, to help us figure out how to live our lives in the right kind of way, in a positive way. And I know that for me personally, when I sit down with Steve or Wally or Mo, either individually or as a group, they ask me consistently, how are you doing, Nathan? And sometimes I will open up about things that I don't feel like I'm doing very well in at the moment, and they help me grasp the problem and then the solution. And they will do that for you too. If you will go to them and if you will open up your life to them. So if we are feeling swamped, there are people around us who love us, who care about what happens to us in our lives, and we need to go to them. And in order to sum this up, we need to ask the question of why we should do this. Obviously, none of us want to get to the burnout point, but the larger lesson in why we should work hard to not get to this point in our lives is that because our greatest pleasure is found in God's pleasure in accomplishing His plans. And that is our goal. I want you to look at chapter 18 of our text in verse 23. The very last thing that Jethro says to Moses is really neat to me, because I think Jethro grasps this concept that the reason why we should not be burnt out is not just so that we can feel good in our lives, but so that God's plans can work. Notice verse 23, if you do this, God will direct you and you will be able to endure, and all this people also will go to their place in peace. Jethro knew enough about God's plans that he knew that they were not supposed to camp out here in the Sinai wilderness forever. That God was going to lead them up into the land of Canaan. They were going to take that land and live there in peace. Jethro understood that broad picture, at least some of it, but not all of it. And so he said, this is ultimately why you need to do this. For the sake of God and His plans. And that's how we reach our peace and our pleasure. And so he didn't give his son-in-law a cutesy pep talk about, this is how you become the better you. What he did was, he gave him concern, and he gave him a reminder of the plan of what God was doing with the people of Israel. And so we ought to have that same kind of concern for each other and in our own lives, that we escape burnout so that God can be glorified and lifted up. Because when we are pushed to the max and we feel like we can't get through the next week, that doesn't glorify God. And it doesn't feel good for us either. And so I hope this has been helpful to you. It's been helpful for me as I try to take a hard look at adjusting things in my own life. And I pray that if you are not a Christian this morning and you realize that you are spiritually burned out because you are wrapped up in sin and you want the forgiveness and the salvation that God can offer, I pray that you would accept it this morning. And if you need to come back to Jesus and you need to claim Him again as your Lord and your Savior, please let us help you with that however we can, as together we stand up and we sing the invitation song, Most Selected.